Now Probert. Probert's loose with the right hand.
He's loose with the right hand, and he starts to retaliate. And down goes Nyland, and the two of them are hammering each other.
Knights of Columbus, that hurt.
It's old time hockey.
Enforcer of all hockey podcasts. It's the biscuit. It's the biscuit.
Damn it! That goal regulation size of what?
The enforcer of all hockey podcasts.
God help the fucking day if fighting's ever banned. There's a country will stop working on some badness fucking can.
Hi everybody. It's the biscuit podcast.
Hey, you wanna go? Yeah, okay. Good luck to you too, buddy.
All right, Brisket Babies. Today I'm joined by Derek Helling, Biscuit alumni and freelance writer, sports writer, who has been covering the ongoing case of, you know, concussions in hockey and the lawsuit with the NHL and some of its former players who have, you know, had later term head injuries, concussions, things like that, and, you know, thought that they were lied to by the NHL. That's pretty much the basis of the lawsuit, right, Derek?
Yeah, that's a pretty good summation of it.
So, was it last week that the NHL reached a settlement with the former players for almost $19 million?
Yeah. Well, they announced that the negotiations between several of the attorneys representing many of the plaintiffs and attorneys for the NHL had reached this tentative agreement. And I think that's the first thing that needs to be stressed here is this is a tentative agreement, largely dependent, wholly dependent on whether or not any of the plaintiffs are actually going to accept the deal. That's what everything hinges upon right now.
Okay, so that means that the NHL has said, we will give you $19 million. Is that acceptable? And now it's on the players to accept that offer.
Yeah, and that's a choice that they all get to make for themselves individually.
Okay.
As the class wasn't certified, which is what we were talking about last time I was on the show, basically all of these guys who would have been part of a class are technically litigating these things all as individual affairs. So every one of them has to make this decision on whether or not to accept these terms individually. But as far as where's the collective effort on those is, a lot of these guys were represented by the same lawyers.
Okay.
So that's where they were kind of, technically they were individual plaintiffs, but that's where kind of this collective part of this settlement comes in, is that the lawyers negotiating for the plaintiffs were doing so on the behalf of a lot of their clients who were part of what would have been a class had it been certified.
So what's the advantage there to not have it certified and not come in as a class and have individual lawsuits instead of one as a or is that even a possible thing to do?
Well, the plaintiffs, the players, probably would have far preferred to have the class certified.
Right.
However unlikely that was, and we know what the ultimate fate of that was. But I guess one possible advantage of going it solo is it might be a little easier to substantiate your claims that way when you're only having to convince a jury or a judge that you individually were wronged by the NHL and or one of its franchises or several of its franchises, whatever your claims are. That might be probably the only benefit to that versus trying to prove that this was a systemic group thing that was going on in the NHL at the time that these guys were playing.
Now, this settlement, you know, they've said, okay, we'll pay the $19 million, but also in that writing it says that they weren't liable for any of it.
So
they're kind of admitting guilt, but legally they're not admitting guilt.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the big benefits to settling for the NHL is and this is very much akin to the NFL settlement in that regard, in that, you know, they didn't have to admit to any wrongdoing. In that, so I guess you could look at it as a way of we're writing a check to make all these lawsuits go away.
Right.
We're not admitting that we did anything wrong, but we want to end this process of litigation right here, which is, you know, common, which is exactly what settlements are made for.
Well, no, that's so. Kind of akin to, well, maybe it's not like OJ or Michael Jackson, who had to pay out a ton of money in civil cases, mm-hmm. but had originally lost, you know, yeah. or had won their main
– criminal.
Yeah, their criminal case, but then they're like, yeah. well, you guys know you guys did something, so start paying out.
Yeah.
So, and those were all settled, I believe, out of court. For Okay.
Yes.
So that same kind of thing, like, do you guys want to continue through litigation and drag this out? Mm-hmm. Which I knew, well, there was a few players who had said, you know, it doesn't matter how long this takes. I'm going to fight it. It's not about the money. It's about the well-being of future players. I forget the gentleman's name, but there was one in particular who we discussed in the last show who was seemed pretty steadfast.
Mike Peluso has been pretty steadfast that he wants his day in court. He doesn't care about the money.
Yes, Peluso. Thank you.
Daniel Carcillo has also been pretty adamant on Twitter that he's not going to accept the settlement, that he also wants his day in court.
Now he's been going off on Twitter. I mean, quite a bit.
Yeah. So that's why there's kind of still some intrigue, is they may not be alone in not accepting this settlement. Along those lines, in the language of this settlement, now this is a 50-page settlement offer, all single space, as opposed to double space. So there's a lot to call through if you're going to go through this.
Now, is that public domain? Have you been able to go through that?
Yeah. Anybody and everybody can go online and read the settlement offer.
Now, is it a ton of just legal jargon, or are you able to pull any actual helpful information out of it?
Both. I would say both. Yeah. Now there is the first thing along the lines of guys accepting or not accepting is this is pretty common in most settlement offers of this type. There's what is called a blow provision, which that's a legal jargon term, which basically means that the NHL can walk away from this offer if certain thresholds aren't met. And in this regard, that's a percentage of the plaintiffs. If a certain percentage of plaintiffs don't accept the terms of the offer within a set amount of time, the NHL can basically rescind the offer. It doesn't specify in the settlement as has been posted exactly what percentage or what number the NHL is looking for, but it does specify the time frame that players have to make a decision. That's 120 days from the execution of the offer, which would be when all the parties have signed it. So that hasn't happened yet. So but the NHL is probably looking to make a decision on the blow provision sometime late winter, early spring 2019, I would imagine.
So that would say, okay, you 10 players have until July 6th. If you don't accept it, what would happen? You could go to litigation after that, or it would just be okay.
Basically, so the litigation would continue.
So non-acceptance would basically mean you're going to court after that.
Yeah, as I've said, technically these are all individual suits right now, so the NHL could settle other ones on different terms. This is just currently the terms that the NHL is offering right now to see if they'll get any bites, so to speak, on that.
Was it Boston or Harvard who had, had some of their files taken or something like that? Are they still in this, or have they bowed out as well?
No.
Or not that anyone has bowed out, but have they? No. Do they have a plea?
Yeah, that was just all about whether or not the NHL would get access to their files. That's been decided a while ago.
Okay.
So that's no longer a relevant issue in this. So a lot has been written about the amount that's been offered, as you referred to, the $19 million. You break that down based on the terms of the settlement, and most of the plaintiffs will get about $22,000.
Okay. So
for their individual cuts.
Now, that doesn't seem like a lot of guys would accept that.
Yeah.
To me, you know, me hearing that amount, as, and I'm not a professional athlete, but I would go, you know, what's that going to do for me?
Yeah. Well, a lot of these players are looking for what's called medical monitoring money. And that would be sufficient to cover those costs, to just be like, hey, I want to make sure that my cognitive neurological state doesn't seriously decline, and I'm going to have some health expenses because of that. And $22,000 would cover that, as long as the deterioration doesn't happen really quickly or severely.
Retired players get insurance still from the NHL, right? But since... Commissioner Bettman has, he's quoted in saying that he thinks that there's no link between concussions and chronic traumatic encephalopathy. Sorry, I heard that word's tough. Now, does that mean that they don't cover treatment for said injuries like that? And there's a direct link between concussions and CTE. I mean, that's fucking science.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, in the opinion of the NHL, CTE isn't real. It doesn't exist.
Which, how can you say? I mean, it's
ask them, man. Ask them.
They have brains that are riddled with CTE.
Yeah. Nope. To them, it's not real. It doesn't exist in the NHL's opinion.
So they just say no, and then that's because they say no. It's just no.
That would depend on the terms of the NHLPA's insurance policy, which I have not read myself, and I'm not familiar with enough to answer that question. In that regard.
And is the money, because if you look at the NFL's settlement, it was roughly what, $1 billion compared to this $18 million? Is that just because of the league size?
Well, the NFL settlement is technically uncapped. It's just going to be that. It just depended upon how many claims that they got and what the extent of the claims were. This is a cap settlement, which is better in some ways and worse in some other. There's advantages to it being capped for the players. And one of them is once the NHL puts the money in the account, they're not going to care what happens to it after that. It's like they've completed their part of the transaction, they fulfill their obligation by funding the money. What happens to it from there, they don't care, because none of it reverts to them if it's not used. They're not ever seeing a penny of that money back anyways, so they're not going to give a shit what happens to it from there. So that's one of the advantages of it being a cap settlement versus an uncap, where the NFL has fought almost every claim as it's been submitted, because they don't want to pay out any more money than they absolutely have to.
Right.
The $22,000 a piece does not really sound like a lot, especially when you consider that the NHL is expected to bring in almost $5 billion in revenue just this season. That's revenue, not profit. We've got to make that distinction there. All the expenses have to get paid out of that. Some plaintiffs might qualify for more based on their circumstances, but those are going to be pretty few and far between.
Right, and I know the number of players who sued from the NFL, from what I'm reading here, dwarfed the NHL, which was like 146 former players. Yeah. And, that includes the estate of some players who have now since passed away.
Yeah.
Who have been, like Philadelphia Flyers Larry Zeidel, who was diagnosed with CTE, whether they think it's real or fake. I mean, he just was by Boston University. But, it says that the the lack of star players hurts the case, and the prevalence of international players who are less inclined to get involved. Is that just like a simply a travel thing, or they're just like, well, we're over here now, it doesn't matter, or we're being taken care of because we, you know, we have universal health care?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably those two things play into the mix. But I think for the notoriety of the case, you know, fans here in the U.S. and Canada just aren't as familiar with European players.
Right.
But I think that, as I said, a lot of the press coverage is focused on the amount of the settlement, and understandably so to a certain degree. But I think the bigger things that need to be paid attention to and talked about are actually written into the execution and the adjudication of the settlement and the terms that the players are going to have to accept if they take the money.
Now break that down, because I, like we spoke before the show started, I had said, you know, I saw that they had reached a settlement and for an amount, and that they weren't liable for the injuries, and that's all you really saw, and it has just kind of been brushed away. What have you seen besides that that really needs to be brought to light? I mean, and that's why, you know, we're on here today. You had, you know, hit me up, and I think it's important for the listeners to understand and to be up to date on what's going on, because no one else is really covering what is actually happening.
Yeah. So there's a little bit of good news for the players. The good news, and kudos to their lawyers on these fronts, for doing what they're paid and what they were hired to do, is that no fees for the lawyers are going to be deducted from the settlement amount.
Well, that's good.
That gets paid to the players. The NHL is throwing in almost $7 million specifically for attorney costs. Now, you've got to give kudos to these attorneys on that front as well, because for the amount of work that they've done and what they would normally charge for their work, they're just about breaking even, if not taking a loss on that, for representing these players. So that's pretty self-explanatory as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
Naturally, the players will have to pay any applicable taxes out of what they get if they decide to take the money. But the rest of whatever they qualify for will be theirs. We've already talked about this being a cap settlement and the benefit to that. So that's going to make it easier for them to qualify for the benefits. And as I've already mentioned, any funds that aren't used aren't going to revert back to the league, which I think was a big win for the playoffs, because that's usually common in these kind of settlements.
Where, we'll pay you out, but you have to pay for your own lawyers.
Well, just like if they don't get enough claims to reach the dollar threshold that was originally decided upon.
Uh-huh.
In most settlements, whatever money was left over would just revert back to whoever originally funded the amount, which in this case would be the NHL. In this settlement, that's not going to happen. That money will not go back to the NHL. It will sit there until looking for future claims that qualify.
Okay. Yeah. So that's kind of that, like a general pot of oh shit money, yeah. And then until that runs out.
As a cap settlement, once it reaches that amount of money that's been put in there, you know, obviously there's no more money, but up until that point, there will still be money available. And as we talked about, the NHL is not going to care what happens to it once they fund it. So those are a few good things in the language of the settlement for the players. So now with that being said, we'll get on to the stuff that should cause everyone to take pause and think about whether or not they accept it if you're in the position of being one of these litigants. And if you're a fan or a family member or a friend of one of these players, something that reasons why you really need to consider before making your decision. The first thing along those lines is if you accept the settlement, take the money that they're offering, you indemnify for not only the rest of your life, but on the behalf of your descendants as well, and all of your family. Basically, anyone who has ever come into contact with you on the behalf of the NHL or one of its franchises or any of its vendors from any and all liability for any health problem you may ever have, past, present, or future. They have gone to an extreme extent in this settlement to cover every possibility, and you're completely releasing them for, you know, now, as I said, not only the rest of your life on everything that could possibly happen, but on your family's behalf and on the behalf of your descendants after you're dead.
Now what does that mean?
Let's take a hypothetical.
Okay.
Let's say a player who accepts a settlement, who isn't really suffering from any symptoms of a TBI, traumatic brain injury, right now. Okay. Let's say in a decade they are.
Right.
That they're mentally and cognitively really start going downhill. They can't take anybody who's ever been connected to the NHL to court and say that they were wronged because they took the settlement.
Okay. So, and it's completely possible because these head injuries and traumas can happen at any time. Mm-hmm. And so it would, you basically just be taking the money, and it doesn't, that seems like it wouldn't, that's not something that would be helpful.
Yeah. Basically, if you take this settlement, that's all you're ever going to see from the NHL.
Right.
For the rest of not only your life, but it's all your kids are ever going to see from the league as well. So, I mean, once again, that's, you know, that's a decision for them to make, but they need to be educated and understand that that's what they're signing up for if they take the money now.
Hmm.
So then there's a second part, which in my opinion is even worse.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So to me, this is the real devil in the details. Or it's the best part if you're the NHL, depending on your perspective, I guess, on this. Is if you accept a settlement, you are restricted to only sharing your health information concerned with the claim that you put the personal physician. That's the only person you can share any of that information with. So once again, to explain that, let's go into a hypothetical here.
Please.
If a player accepts a settlement and he gets a scan of his brain done, and it shows what we all would expect, of massive signs of CTE and deterioration. If he shares those images of his brain with a member of the media, and that gets published, he would have to forfeit his award.
Wow. That's gross.
I really can't overstate the importance of this.
I mean, he wouldn't be able to give it to a university.
Nope. No, the only person,
unless that's the one person he went to.
That was his personal position.
Now, that seems like...
Once again, that couldn't be released to the public then.
Right.
Yeah.
So it really wouldn't matter who you show it to.
No. But this is that goes a long way towards helping the NHL continue its denial.
That's dark.
What that's all about. It's so important because we're still in the relative infancy of understanding the correlation between sport and brain injuries, along with CTE as a disease. I mean, we've just identified the first genetic markers for CTE. That's how in the infancy of understanding this disease we are.
Right.
So the NHL's biggest win in this settlement is being able to control the information going forward. This is hush money is what it is.
Yeah.
It's not really all that much of it.
That's not hush money. I mean, for hush money, that's a bullshit amount.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an insulting amount, really. And that all that, I mean, that's so dark to be like, oh, hey, whenever you turn in your brain scans or whatever, that's it, guys. You're not fucking, we're not showing it. We're not releasing it. That, to me, that is an admission of guilt.
Yeah. Because, I completely agree with you.
Man, that is disturbing. And are you going to find out case by case, like, oh, player A did not accept, player B did not accept, or is it going to be, you know, come down to that date?
Yeah, well, this is all being conducted in a federal court in Minnesota, so that's all public information. Whether or not basically drop their suits, that's public information. Now, whether or not they accept these terms or some other terms that are proposed to the NHL, that's between them and the plaintiffs, and excuse me, between the plaintiffs and the attorneys for the league. Those would be private transactions. So unless the players come forward and say, hey, I accepted the November settlement or I settled for different terms, that we won't know for sure unless they volunteer that information themselves. But what is public information is whether or not they drop their cases.
Okay.
So that'll be a pretty strong indication of the ones who settle and or just give up.
Well, I really hope these guys continue to fight because it doesn't seem like like you said, the hush money doesn't seem to be all that much, all that worth it. And I can't see, I mean, and yeah, it sucks being in court and all that stuff, but I hope that these 146 guys see the bigger picture. And as much as the NHL has, you know, all of a sudden started caring about concussions, even though there's no link between concussions and CTE in their eyes, you know, trying to change the rules and, you know, penalties and suspensions, there's damage that has been done to players, and I just can't see why they can't accept that and just say we were wrong for not at least admitting it and then just move on. And now everybody knows, and that's what happens. I mean, it's like the NFL. You know you're going to get a concussion playing football. You know it's from football. The guys know that, and they still say it's worth it. I'm getting paid a shit ton of money. I mean, there's plenty of guys that say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think a lot of them will take the terms as offered right now. That's what the plaintiffs' counsels who negotiated the settlement are recommending, are suggesting and recommending to their plaintiffs to do.
Right.
The reason is because because the NHL really has all the leverage here, and the players have very little.
Yeah.
And the plaintiffs, for the lawyers, who once again are doing this at breaking even, maybe at a loss for some of them, really think that this is the best deal that they could possibly get from the league.
What do you think?
I think to a large degree that's true.
Yeah.
Because there's a difference between whether or not it's fair and the best deal they could get.
Right.
Is it fair? Absolutely not. It's far from. But this is better than nothing that they might get if they litigate it all the way.
And that's how the courts work. It's not, none of it's ever fair. I mean, someone's always catching something, getting screwed somewhere or another. I mean, even myself, I've been through custody battles before with my first son. And the lawyer just straight up told me, here's the piece of paper. You need to sign this because it's not going to get any better than this.
Yeah.
And it was for a bullshit amount of time per month that I'm – and he was just – and she was just like, listen, this is as good as it's going to get. We kept him here in Ohio. Be thankful for that and, you know, try again when he's older. So there comes a point where that lawyer's been in these cases so many times and seen and read these cases and seen these cases. And, you know, there's all these precedents that have been made through law and, you know, justice and court that at the end of the day, I think you're right that it's – if they're saying, guys, listen, we can continue to do this, but this is – this is going to be it. This is the best it's going to be.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, if you're one of these players who is actually looking to get some money and not just have your day in court and vilify the NHL, then I would probably join the chorus of the lawyers for the plaintiffs and say you probably should take this.
Well, I'm sure a lot of them will, like you said, but I hope Peluso stays with it, and I hope that he's not looked at as a pariah or a scapegoat. I hope that he's held high and people stand behind him instead of going, oh, fuck this guy. Why is he still doing this? And the other gentleman's name, too. I think you'll see both of them stand their day in court. I really do.
Yeah, I hope so, just for, I guess, the legal theater that's going to represent, along with, you know, what we might learn about the NHL and the teams that they played for and their careers. But I really think the long-term solution to all this is in court. I think that if the players really want to affect some massive change in this regard in the NHL, that has got to be done by them as a group at the bargaining table through the next round of CBA negotiations. It's easy for me to say that sitting here with a career that's not dependent upon the NHL.
Right.
And not having to worry about the very short window of time that you have to make your hockey money.
Right.
But I think that there's got to be a balance between trying to get what you can in your bank account while you can get it and being able to actually do something with that money after you get done because you've got some part of a brain left.
Right.
Because what good is millions of dollars if you're sitting in a chair crapping yourself and you can't remember your name?
Right. So you're calling for another lockout. You're a lockout guy.
Well, I'm not necessarily that. I'm just saying that the players have got to realize that there's life after hockey.
Yeah. Which is hard to realize, I think.
Absolutely.
When you're in it.
That's an easy thing.
Right.
Yeah, because you're in it, you're trying to get every dollar that you possibly can.
Yeah.
And a lot of times what you give up to get money is control over the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's got to be a balance.
Yeah, I really think it's important that some of these guys see their day in court. And I, like you said, for the theater and for that particular reason that you had just mentioned, that these guys can have something and go, look at Peluso, man. He went, forfeited a settlement, stood his day. He's, you know, has health problems. This could be me. We got to do something about it.
Yeah. If it would have that effect, that would be great.
Absolutely.
He may walk away. He may walk away with nothing. That may very well be his fate as far as a financial fate goes. But if he can affect change in that regard, then I think it will have been worth it.
Now, how does this settlement affect your involvement in following the case? Are you still right in the pocket, you know, writing about it? Or is this kind of like a nail in the coffin?
Well, you know, as I'll be watching the dockets for players to drop their cases, because that'll be a pretty strong indication that they're settling.
Right.
So if what I think is going to happen, and the majority of them do,
you'll accept start seeing the settlement, them drop. Yeah.
That'll probably be, you know, something for a final moratorium article on this whole thing.
Yeah.
But then, you know, as the individual lawsuits that play out from those who don't accept the settlement, I'll be covering that as well.
Well, definitely keep me posted over here, you know, with that information, and I'll retweet, you know, whatever kind of things you're sending out too. I'd be happy to do that.
Two of the best resources for a pretty thorough and great breakdown of this for people who want to go read it themselves are found on one of the sites that I have written for. It's called advocacyforfairnessinsports.org. Sheila Dingus is the name of the owner of the site and the one who has written these breakdowns. It's a two-part breakdown. It's probably the best that I've seen out there, including, you know, all the big-time publications. Sheila's done a masterful job, and so definitely want to recommend that to the listeners.
Absolutely. And Derek, thanks a lot for coming and bringing this to light and giving me the hypotheticals. And you're very good at making it realistic, because court jargon can be very confusing, I think, on purpose. So it's nice that the listeners and myself can hear you say it. You know, I can kind of bounce questions off, and I have a better idea of what's going on. I really appreciate the time and the understanding of this settlement from the NHL.
Definitely my pleasure. And that's what this whole journalism thing is about, is breaking it down.
So, and where can the listeners find you? I know a lot of them listen to the first episode, but you know, we're getting listeners every week. So give a shout out of your plugs and all that.
Yeah, on Twitter you can find me at @DHellingSports. That's DHE Hockey Sticks Sports. You know, I've got all my content and some other random stuff that they either may or may not find amusing on there. So,
and your Instagram too, if you want to find out what fancy socks you got.
Oh yes, not only that, but you know, but if you like Munchkin Cats or food or breakfast cereal, there's a lot of, I love that shit. So that's on my Instagram.
I always like seeing what socks and what hat you got.
Yeah, I've got two new hats that I'm going to be posting soon, actually.
Well, I'm excited to see them, man. I'm always right there watching, going, oh, what Derek's got a new hat.
The people at my local vid store know me by name.
Oh, I would fucking bet so, man. Hey, dude, I really appreciate it, man. You're doing great work, and it's important that you can make this legible for people. So I appreciate you, Derek.
No problem. Thank you, sir, for you.
Absolutely. You have a good day, man.
You too.